settle down, but they won't let me. A fugitive must be a rolling stone. Down every road, there's always one more city. I'm on the run, the highway is my home.
Hi, everybody. Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken on for another 30 minutes of discussion on television's greatest drama, The Fugitive. Tonight's program is being recorded in advance, so if you have comments about it, we can't do it live, but you can always email them to fugitive@ksav.org. Tonight it's going to be The Three Faces of Gerard. And as per usual, to kick things off, let's go to Bobby Neer.
Thanks, Dave. Considering the fact that nearly 45 years after The Fugitive debuted on TV, and nearly 41 years after the series ended, anyone who knows anything about the series, whether they themselves were around at the time or not, can immediately name Barry Morse as the man who relentlessly pursued Richard Kimball. You might assume that his appearance in the series was trumpeted to the world in advance as the most important thing that ever happened. But the truth is that his initial appearance seems almost like an afterthought. In the pilot episode, Fear in a Desert City, he appears all right for a grand total of 3 minutes. In Act 1, he is seen about 5 minutes into the story, standing in front of a map and telling Captain Carpenter that he has every intention of recapturing Kimball. This takes 2 minutes. And then nearly an hour later, in the epilogue, for just 1 minute, while Monica Wells stands in the cemetery after burying her evil husband, Gerard comes out of the shadows to confront her. Barry Morse wears a ridiculous trench coat and fedora and looks amazingly like Dick Tracy, thereby threatening to derail the series for a second time and making his character into a cartoon. But the actor, already more experienced than anyone else on the show, knew better, and legend has it that after filming that scene, he threw the prop clothing behind a fake bushel on the set, thereby making it clear that he was going to create the character of Philip Gerard, not the writers, thereby changing TV history forever. Now, we all know that this is the story of Richard Kimball, fugitive, man on the run. But without Gerard, he's just lost and traveling the country meeting various characters. It's been done before on Route 66, where Todd and Buzz take off in their hot little Corvette and break the hearts of beautiful women across the country. Years later, after The Fugitive, Ben Gazzara runs for his life after finding out he's fatally ill. But none of those fictional characters had a real-life person breathing down their necks the way that Kimball does. I agree, good-looking matinee idol David Janssen is the star of this party, but realistically, it is Philip Gerard and the person of Barry Morse who stirs the drinks. I suppose if you looked at the original script, you could see that coming. But who would have thought that it would take a proper British actor with an accent to match to bring him to life and attach a Midwestern accent to him so realistically that I assumed all along that Barry Morse really was born in Indiana? Kitty, you read Barry Morse's autobiography and you wrote an extensive four-part review, which appears to this day in the file section of our group, The Fugitive Views and Reviews. So you know as well as anyone just what a varied and amazing career Barry Morse had for well over half a century. But for our purposes tonight, since we only have a half-hour show, what about The Fugitive? Was the character of Philip Gerard so well-drawn that just about anyone could have played him? Or was it Barry Morse's interpretation of the character, starting from the moment he threw that coat and fedora away, that made this character live on as many years as he has? Or was it a combination of the two?
Oh, I think it was probably a combination of the two. You know, I know that when Barry Morse was first sent the script, he said in his book that when he read the pilot episode, Fear in a Desert City, Quinn Martin had not designated to him which character he was supposed to be playing, whether it was the fugitive or the police lieutenant. And after he was done reading the script, he went back to Quinn Martin and he said, well, it looks interesting, but quite frankly, I really can't see myself playing either Kimball or Gerard. And he says, what did you have in mind? And he said, well, I wanted you to play Gerard. And he was like, well, I just, and he was really kind of reluctant about it initially. He's just like, I just don't know if this is really the right part for me. And he, and Quinn Martin wanted him very much to play this part because he had had Barry Morris, well, he had seen Barry Morris on stage, and that was how he first knew about him. He had appeared in a play in Los Angeles, and many Hollywood people were in the audience, and one of the people there one night was Quinn Martin, and that was how he ended up working on, you know, he made about, I think he said about three appearances on The Untouchables, and he had to cop a different accent each time he was on that show because he played three very, very different characters. And he was just very impressed with Barry Morse's versatility, that he could cop these different accents and just play these different characters very convincingly. And that was why he wanted him to play Gerard. And he said the other thing, you know, the other reason why he wanted him to play that part was because he also knew that Barry also brought, could bring little things to parts that maybe other people didn't think about. And, you know, and the him throwing away the fedora hat and the trench coat was basically just the first thing that he did. You know, he said sometimes you saw Gerard with glasses, sometimes you didn't. That was Barry Morse doing it. You know, that was never a direction from anybody else. I mean, there were some other little quirky things that he would try to bring in. The one he said his one regret about Gerard was that they never really got to delve into his personality a little more. To really find out why he was so obsessed with his capture. He enjoyed doing the one episode, The Landscape with Running Figures. He actually thought that was kind of the peak of the series. He thought the series kind of slowly went on a decline after that. But he very much liked doing that episode because it had Gerard's wife in it, and he was sorry that you know, you never saw his wife again after that. So basically those are the things that I remember most from what he said about Gerard.
Well, the fact that he would, as an actor, take it upon himself to throw that coat and that hat away says something about his intention to put his own mark on the series.
Yeah, well,
how many actors would have I wouldn't have the nerve to do that. If I was an actor and in a series, I'd figure I'd be in big trouble, you know, take it upon myself. I'm not wearing that anymore.
Well, you know,
I have a lot of clout to be able to do something like that.
And I think, too, is that both he and David Janssen never really thought the series was going to take off like it did. You know, he said that early on when they first started filming, he was asked, you know, David Janssen was not, he said that David Janssen really didn't think that this show was going to become the big hit that it was, because the one thing he had, you know, he had said, they had kind of discussed salary in, you know, general terms, and I think it came out that, well, Barrymore said, well, you're the star, so you're obviously making more than me. And
did he say anything in his book about whether or not he got his usual salary, or did it matter, or what?
Well, he said that it was probably the best, I think at that point it was the best gig that he had gotten, because he, this was the first time he had not only gotten a good salary, but, you know, the studio put him up in an apartment, real close to the studio, so that he could just basically walk to the studio. They were even going to give him a car, but he said there was no reason to give me a car because I can just walk to work from where my apartment is that you've got me.
My goodness, today's stars on TV and in the movies would assume they were getting all of that automatically.
Yeah, but like I said, interestingly enough, he said that he and David Janssen both did not think the series was really going to take off, and he remembered talking with David Janssen, and David Janssen said, well, I've got a certain percentage of the show.
Yeah, that was a bad idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, and And Barry Morse says, well, that's great. And he says, yeah, but what if the percentage is nothing? Because that was David Jansen's expectations at the time.
All right, let's let Ken in on this. Ken?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, I agree everything you're saying about this character, Lieutenant Gerard, really being the success of The Fugitive. I mean, can you imagine anyone else playing the part? Now, we had a lot of actors in the 60s, and I keep brainstorming and thinking, who else could have played this fictional character who is obsessed with bringing Kimball in? And I say no one. You know, for this show, Barry Morris nailed it. And I'd like to see a survey, you know, maybe someone would have a big survey and list the top 10 fictional characters in television history. And let's see where Richard Kimball and Lieutenant Gerard, you know, end up on the list.
Well, I can't say that I could imagine anybody else playing the part, because I can't remember who was around back then. It's too long ago.
I can't either. I'm too young to remember that.
I can hardly say that, but I can remember.
About it, the 60s, the 50s and the 60s, there were a lot of talented actors. You know, we saw them in movies, you know, Steve McQueen, you know, just for example, and all these, you know, Raymond Burr from Perry Mason.
Raymond Burr as Gerard, that seems bizarre, doesn't it?
No. And I think Steve McQueen had far better things to do than get involved with a TV show.
What about Lauren Green?
No.
Let's say
he was on Bonanza at that time.
Yeah, but let's say he never took Bonanza. Let's say he took this role instead. That's what I was thinking.
No, I actually think that the series benefits by having somebody play the part who's not that well known.
Right.
I mean, he might have been in the. I mean, obviously he was in The Untouchables, and he was in The Twilight Zone, two shows that I watched faithfully, but I have a slight idea who he was. So, I mean,
yeah,
I think it was better that way, because if I need to talk myself into believing that this is not a TV show, that this is really happening in order to get anything out of it, then I need to have an actor there that I haven't seen somewhere else. That's one of the problems with familiar actors. If you attach them to too many roles, and after a while you go, oh, it's just another, you know, it's another day at the office. It's no big deal.
Yeah, well, you know, and that was the thing. Before Barry started doing stuff in the States, I mean, he had done a lot of work in England and in Canada, but he was really known a lot, I think, for, he really made his career more out of playing supporting parts. He didn't seem to do leads that often. You know, and what I was going to say too was, when you were talking about how he, just briefly to get back to the fedora, the hat, and the trench coat, that I think part of the reason he did throw that stuff away is because he didn't think the series was necessarily going to take off. So I think he took the attitude that he had nothing to lose, because he didn't think, he and David Jansen didn't think this was going to go much beyond the pilot.
Let's take a brief time out, and in fact, I'll have a suggestion of my own. Always fascinating stuff when I contribute to the discussion. A brief time out. We'll come back and talk some more about the three faces of Gerard, face number one. You're talking Fugitive on Cherevision Radio.
Hi, Gordon. What you been up to?
Big thanks, Fred. I'm a full-time student at bartending college.
Wow! I never had time for a formal education.
Well, I decided to make time, but it's not easy. Bartending college is a 4-week course.
Gee, how far along are you?
Well, let's see. This is Tuesday, the third week. Hey, I'm a junior, and I'm late for a daiquiri lecture. Why don't you join me?
Why not?
Bartending college.
You've already spent enough time on the other side of the bar to qualify for enrollment.
Bartending college.
We'll teach you everything you need to know. You'll get a starter set of bartenders' jokes. Like,
so I says to the guy, you can stay, but the cow's gotta go.
Bartending college.
You'll learn how to roll drunks, water the liquor, and skim the cash register. And remember, as the bartender, you drink for free.
Last call
for integrity.
All right, we're back to talk a little more Fugitive on KSAV. Tonight's program is part one on the three faces of Girard. In 2 weeks will be part two. I want to throw in, you talked about briefly about the other actors playing the part and who might have been around. One that played in a Quinn Martin show that possibly could have done it, what about Carl Malden? And let me say, I could go back to Bobby Neer to start this off.
Yeah, I could suppose so. The only problem with that was Carl Malden was too much of a movie star to be involved in that series, that may never go anywhere.
Well, so he was in Streets of San Francisco, though.
Well, that's true. That was, yep. You're right.
He was the star of that show.
Yeah, I think that was in the 70s, wasn't it? Wasn't it like the early 70s, something?
Late 60s, early
70s. Yeah, I could have seen that. Yeah, I don't have any doubts that there are people around who could have done it. I just think that it had more meaning to have somebody who was, Barry Morse is not unknown, but to American audiences, he was virtually unknown, and he was only a guest star in things like The Untouchables. Those were anthology series. Guest stars came and went all the time. I think that I think it was better this way. But sure, I don't have any doubt that anybody could have done it. You know, the problem with this is that we're so used to seeing him do the part that when Ken says, "I can't imagine anybody else doing it," well, the reason is because we never saw anybody else do it. So it's impossible. It's like imagining somebody else as your parents. You can't imagine somebody else being your parents because your parents are your parents. So you grew up that way, and it's so embedded in your memory that it's impossible. But I'm sure there's a long list of people who could have done it. So let's see now. With all of this raving about how memorable Barry Morse was as Girard, you would naturally assume that he owned the part from day one, and nobody would be foolish enough to try and duplicate it. But this is TV, and one thing you quickly learn is that nothing on TV is either too good or too awful to be brought back again, especially if it can make a profit. In 1993, more than 25 years after Richard Kimball walked down the street in Stafford, A Free Man, he's back on the run again, this time in a feature film. 7 years after that, he's on his feet again when The Fugitive comes back to TV to start a new century. As we have already learned, you can't have Kimball without Girard, and that means since Barry Morse is a little long in the tooth by that time and has a long gray beard to go with it, finding two new actors crazy enough to attempt to put a new spin on an old character. Two experienced actors take on the impossible, and one of them wins an Oscar for his efforts, while the other one struggles mightily before failing. Who got it right and who got it wrong? The Three Faces of Lieutenant Girard, Part 2, The Fugitive Movie, and the 2000-2001 series, 2 weeks from tonight on Talking Fugitive. You know, before tonight's program, I went back and scrolled through Ed Robertson's book, The Fugitive Recaptured, and counted the number of times Barry Morse was actually in The Fugitive. Assuming I counted correctly, which is debatable, in the first three seasons of 90 episodes, he was in 20 of them. That's less than a quarter of all the episodes in those three seasons. Although, as I pointed out earlier, he doesn't appear in the pilot episode except for the first few minutes and the last minute of the story. And although he doesn't even come back until episode number 3, when the series begins, by the time we are past episodes 4 and 5, Never Wave Goodbye, and have seen him laying on that beach near death while Kimball hovers over him, and yet he still advises Kimball to let him take him back to death row, we're pretty much convinced that this is one nutty character who will do just about anything. Although I was a teenager when the series made its initial run on ABC, I can remember how excited I would get during the opening credits when they would list the guest stars, and then at the very end, the announcer would say, "And Barry Morse as Lieutenant Philip Girard." And I practically jumped out of my seat because that meant something special. This was no ordinary episode, not nearly. In fact, of those 20 stories I mentioned that Barry Morse was in, 18 of them are today considered classic Fugitive episodes. As a matter of fact, you can't find a classic Fugitive story without Barry Morse being in it. Ken, did you feel that same way as well, that the mere mention of his name in the credits meant something special was going to happen?
Yes, I remember the same feeling. You know, at the beginning, you know, you had the guest stars, and then you would always wonder, is Lieutenant Girard in this one? Is he? And sometimes they went 6, 7, 8 episodes in a row without him, and you kind of get let down. But I remember, you know, the first time I when I was watching the series, you know, Fear in a Desert City, I wasn't too impressed, you know, with the lieutenant. And then even in episode 3, The Other Side of the Mountain, he is chasing Kimbo there a little bit, but I wasn't impressed. But it was the signature moment for me was in Never Wave Goodbye, and you remember the scene. Kimbo goes to the L.A. County Jail, and Gerard's poking around, you know. And then they have that one moment where they look at each other on the elevator. You remember, I guess, Gerard is on the other side of the bars.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
Kimbo's in the elevator. And right there, that just struck me. And a lot of people have commented that that was a very crucial moment. Right now we know that Lieutenant Gerard is serious. He wants Kimble. And obviously the rest of the episode, and then we see his obsession, and even he gets into a boat and almost drowns, and then, you know, he's there, Kimble, let me take you in. You know, he's dying, or actually almost near death.
No, he's not dying.
Yeah, well, he's almost near death. If it wasn't for Kimbo, he would have died.
He's pulled him out of the water. He's going to recover.
But if it wasn't for Kimbo, he would have died in the water, right?
Absolutely. But because he's out of the water, he's not going to die.
Well, he looked like he was going to die. I don't know about that.
Well, if Kimbo does nothing and leaves him there, I wonder what happens to him.
If you fish somebody out of the water, if they've almost drowned, you can't just fish them out and leave them on the beach. I don't think that works that way, does it? Don't you have to...
Well,
He's going to drown anyway.
I'm sure he did mouth-to-mouth resuscitation on him, but obviously they couldn't show that. It was the 60s.
Yeah.
But if he's able to verbally say, Kimble, let me take you in, he obviously doesn't have any water in his lungs at that point, if he's able to verbalize something.
Well, I never thought about this, and that makes Kimble an idiot. Because he's standing there, and he's got Susan Oliver standing there with him, and he's got to go get help for him. That's why he walked away, because he had to go get help. That doesn't even make any sense. I never thought about that. It's interesting. Yeah. I may never be able to watch that again the same way.
But, Bob, you know, don't you agree, the first season, Lieutenant Gerard, or Barry Morris as the lieutenant, really... contributed to the success of the series. I mean, Nightmare at North Oak, Search in a Windy City, and The Endgame are all in the first season.
Right.
And Barry Morris is just excellent in his role.
Well, let me just, since you mentioned Never Wave Goodbye as being a moment for you, let me tell you there's two moments for me in the entire series. One involves words, and the other one involves just the look. And for me, it was Nightmare at North Oak when Gerard Kimball's behind bars at that point, and he has, of course, that dream sequence for the second time. And he wakes up and he looks outside the bars, and there is Gerard glaring at him through the bars. I've never seen anybody look at anybody like that. I mean, you had to be scared out of your mind in order to see that guy standing out there. And then they have this awesome dialogue with each other, in which Gerard simply confronts him with everything in the past. Oh, you say you didn't do it, and it was true, and he starts naming the cities that he was in. You said it here, and you said it there, and you did this, and you did that. And he's absolutely certain that, you know, he's got him. Now, of course, you know, David Jansen does a wonderful one. They're perfect together in this scene. And when I saw that scene, I thought to myself, well, it doesn't get any better than this. I mean, and it's so early in the series. How will they ever top this again? This kind
well,
of dialogue.
The problem is they couldn't.
Huh?
The problem is they couldn't.
Well, that's true. And so that was about dialogue. And then in the third season, in Ill Wind, during the hurricane season, you remember when Kimball was trying to get away at the train depot. And he walks through there, and he's got two cops behind him who are following him in there. It's incredibly suspenseful. And he walks through, and the wind is howling, and it's dark, and the things are blowing all around. He gets near the end of it, and Gerard simply walks out of nowhere. He doesn't even have a gun in his hand. He's simply standing at the other end of the other entrance, and he gives that killer look at Kimball. No dialogue at all. I mean, absolute perfection. I would sit here and watch that 1,000 times. That is so scary. It's just unbelievable. And he said neither one had to say anything. When you see that kind of thing in a TV series, a movie, or anything, then you know this is perfect casting. These two were meant to play against each other, were they not?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, my only problem with Gerard is that the writers of the series, I think, turned Gerard, basically turned him into more of a cartoon figure by the end of the series, though.
I mean, time is not on your side when you drag this out too long.
Yeah.
That's why I don't even, in our program today, I haven't mentioned the fourth season, because I think, you know, to be honest with you, the series should have ended at the end of three seasons. That's nothing today, of course, and you don't make any money off syndication if you don't have at least 100 episodes. But the truth of the matter is that you're right. If you're going to drag it into a fourth season, even the best actor in the world can't make it believable after a while.
Well, yeah, you know, and I have no problems with Barry Morse in that. My problem is always with the writers, because, and perhaps it wouldn't be so ridiculous if they hadn't had Kimball save his life so many times and save his wife and save his son. I mean, it's like anybody who's anybody after that many times would kind of start to scratch their head and say, am I really doing the right thing, or is the rest of the world correct and I'm the only one who's wrong? I mean, you know, there's not even a hint of questioning on it.
Well, you
and
know what?
And basically, Gerard just, I think, ends up looking stupid, and I think it's really it's sad that Barry Morse had to play these scripts out the way they were written.
To a degree, I understand what you're saying, but I'm glad they didn't do it. I mean, I would not have wanted that to happen. That's the whole point. I wouldn't have wanted to get to the point in the series where Gerard begins to turn his way and say, well, I don't know, you know, maybe this guy has saved my life so many times, he's not so bad. Ken, you didn't really want to see that, did you?
I don't know.
I would have preferred to have him not save his life as many times as we've seen him save his life. I mean, it's like, what is it? Are the writers just that desperate? They're like, gosh, I can't think of anything to write this week. Oh, heck, let's have him save Gerard again.
Well, that's just a cheap way out. That's all. They were just going to the easy way.
Yeah, two or three times of saving his life is enough for me. I mean, in season four,
I think once should have been sufficient. I mean, we saw him save his life and never wave goodbye, and that should have been it.
Really?
Well, Ill Wynn was a good story. I thought that was touching.
Okay, 1 minute.
All right, wait. Before we go, though, Kitty, you've got to tell us your favorite episode that Lieutenant Gerard played in. Now, you know mine is Never Wave Goodbye, and I think Bobby Neer, his favorite one is Landscape, if I'm not wrong. So
I would have a hard time pulling against that, yeah.
But Kitty, you got to tell us, which favorite episode did Gerard that you liked in?
I think it would have to be a toss-up between Search in a Windy City and May God Have Mercy.
Well, those are good choices, I'll tell you that. I can't argue with any of that. I don't know that I would pick Search in a Windy City, though, because that was more about Mike Decker than it was about Gerard and Kimball. But, May God Have Mercy was, terrific. Yeah. It's very hard to pick any one over another one. And I think just in conclusion, the thing I really appreciated about Barry Morse and his portrayal is that he always took it seriously. He didn't turn it into a parody. After a while, you know, actors, if they do one character too much, begin to not even take it seriously. He always did. He never really changed at all, and that's what I really appreciated about it, because if I like a character, I want him to stay the same.
All right, and speaking of characters and characters you like, you're going to be back in 2 weeks to talk some more about the character of Philip Gerard, when it'll be part two of The Three Faces of Gerard. Hopefully we'll be on live at that time. Everybody else, thanks for listening, and be back 2 weeks for more Talkin' Fugitive here on Retro Radio.